assistance I can. Thank you again for calling. And I'll talk to you soon. The mailbox is full.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. Yesterday I did mention that I was going to leave the clip of the from the Run for the Freedom last year that I did to Susanna, encouraging him, the man you become one with, love him well. I did add it to yesterday, and because I didn't till now, but... And I'm including it again today because I just listened to it, and it's a big deal. And the irony is, yesterday I got a postcard. I did not mention it, so I'm going to mention it now to Mrs. Dorothy Jane Kozlowski. Run for the Freedom was Saturday, and an interesting dialogue about how kids become attracted to drugs. It concerns me. I love you. I love you. I love you. You're a man. So, you know, tie it all together. It just seems to happen. I did send a postcard today to Jim Cross. My LDS friend is driving from Utah to meet and hike Big Frog Mountain on Zadok's birthday. The PCA, will they close their hearts? Do you know North Carolina is closer than Utah? You know, because I was thinking about that this morning. This morning I got a message. Corey started the drive. He's on the way. So, you know, when you look at a map of the United States, you'll see Utah over here and Tennessee over here. It's a drive. So he should be here Saturday. But it's a drive. And it's kind of like, what does it take? What kind of motivation do you have to say, I'm going to go virtually cross country to see guy, have some conversations, and take a hike? What kind of motivation is that? But he's on the way. I did mention yesterday that I was going to send a second request to the Orthodox Church. I did, you know, I asked him about the Shireen Abdu Akleh. Again, that is a big deal. That is a big deal. And anyway, that is a big deal. And let's see, the other thing I asked him was about the church that was bombed, a 1,600-year-old church that was bombed in Gaza. You know, and I do wonder about that. You know, there's the age thing, which has a novelty aspect to it. But, you know, because it doesn't fit the narrative, I don't think we'll hear much about it anymore. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to know about the Orthodox community, because there may be a tight-knit, you know, kind of global idea, or, well, that's over there, this is over here. I don't know. I wonder about that, so I ask him, and you know, we'll see. The odds of a response, well, you know, I sent out all those emails, a bunch of them. A bunch of them. I did send it out to a couple more places to see if they'd be interested in publishing it. Especially I wrote to one because, because my motivation is to bring some clarity to some in the Christian community. They may say, okay, this is not what I thought it was. Now that you show from the Bible that maybe my understanding is wrong, as opposed to what the 6 o'clock news says, or you know, the Zionist community or the Christian Zionist. But one of the things, the reason I went to this particular place was because they had an article on there that I actually saw in a couple places, same article. But there have been several that are doing this, showing the fallacies around what was reported for, was it October 7th, some of the nature of the initial raid by Hamas. And what I find fascinating, because see, this you know, I mentioned this, you know, I think I mentioned about the 40 decapitated babies. You know, that was discussed and so forth, even by Joe Biden. And That's, you know, we don't talk about that anymore because it wasn't ever true. And, you know, what they're, it seems to be. And then, of course, see, there's the initial stuff. Let's throw out some stuff because, again, this is the common technique. We'll throw out some stuff, including some big lies. And then we'll say, well, okay, let's forget about that because it wasn't true in the first place, but we threw it out there. It seeds in somebody's mind, and then we'll move on to something else. So, you know, you say, oh, well, that wasn't true, but we won't dwell on that. But we seed it in people's mind. And so when you talk to people about, oh, yes, they are obviously horrendous and so forth because of the vile things that they've done, like decapitating babies, which they didn't do. But what the, you know, now that it's been a couple of weeks and information has been collected and put together, a whole lot of the story that happened is completely untrue. Apparently, a lot of the deaths, at least a quarter of them, maybe as much as half of them, were not civilians, they were military. So it was not Hamas fighting civilians. It was a military battle. And then, of course, some of the other suggestion is a whole lot of the people that died, a whole lot of the Israeli people who died, were killed by the IDF. Why is kind of confusing. I'm not sure. So, but again, the question is this true? Or, you know, it's been a little time to accumulate this. And, you know, it's just like the killing of Shireen Abdul Akhli. People are collecting all the cell phone videos and so forth and say, oh, well, okay. You know, it's because a lot of the report, the bombing of the hospital, you know, where the 500 people died, some of the initial reports from the Israeli government, they showed, here's some of the photographs of how it was bombed. The images they showed were 2 years old. And obviously, that's not a credible witness, is it? That's what we call a lie. But it makes Hamas, I mean, the objectives make Hamas look bad. And just because you point out that what Hamas was accused of was untrue, that doesn't mean you're endorsing Hamas. And just because you point out that some of the things that the Israelis are doing doesn't mean you're condemning all of them. Because I have no doubt there's a lot of kindness and graciousness within the IDF and obviously the Israeli community. And apparently some of the people who have been released by Hamas, including, I saw one video of an old lady being released, shaking the hands of the Hamas soldiers, saying, thank you for the care you showed me. Because there was one where I read that a woman was told by the Hamas soldiers, we are taking you captive. We are going to protect you. Apparently they did. Because the objective was not to harass, but to take some captive in order to exchange to get their people freed. And so you can put on the narrative that they took all these people and did vile things. But, you know, and of course there is the question of the, you know, the Stockholm syndrome idea, where people who are captive become, gain some sort of affinity to their captors. You know, we have to keep that in mind too. There is a possibility of that. So, you know, what is the reality? I don't know. But what I'm so concerned about the jump on the bandwagon, let's accuse Hamas of all sorts of vile things. I don't think, I have no reason to say, yes, we should endorse Hamas at all. Same way, and even more so, I would say even less so, that we have less reason to endorse the IDF because their history is horrendous. And again, remember, they're continuing to bomb Syria. And the issue with Lebanon confuses me a little bit, because why is there fighting going on between the country of Israel and the country of Lebanon right now? It seems to be this was internal, in the sense of the Palestinian versus the Israeli within the borders of Israel. Why are they dealing with Lebanon? Why are they firing bombs back and forth? And I don't know who started that, but either way, that does confuse me. And of course, everybody says, oh, let's bomb Iran. Why? Why? It's oh, look, somebody crossed the street. Well, they're obviously sponsored by Iran. Let's go shoot them before they develop nuclear weapons. What? I mean, it is amazingly, it's amazing. Anyway, I sent out the cards, and I got one response. That's all. But I got one response. And that was an encouragement. It was an encouragement that it was no discussion of anything particular, but it was just an endorsement. What you did was thought-provoking, kind of something to that nature. Said. But anyway, so I was encouraged by that, because my expectation was closer to zero, and I got one. But anyway, I am extremely concerned. I did the hike to the farmer's market today, even though anticipated no one would be there, and no one was. But, you know, I took some stuff to the recycle place just to get out of here, because I'm going to be hosting a gentleman for a couple nights, which is kind of like, what? You know, and of course, I have a 3-bedroom house, but I have one bed. but, you know, he sleeps in his vehicle, so... whether he'll sleep in his vehicle or he has a bed or whatnot to bring out, I don't know what we'll do. I have no idea. But he's on the way. And I find this really, really amazing. And the emotions are just... the emotion's been a problem. The emotions have been a problem. And I did, there's apparently now a third, make it a fourth person who's come to the table through Narav in reference to Shofar Nexus. But he won't be able to participate until next week, which concerns me, because obviously next week I have some deadlines to meet. It's a real problem. I'm just... I am concerned that my thoughts, my heart, and whatnot... See, one of the things that has become very serious in my mind. You know, when I look at my wall, I have this gentleman, Shadi Shada. He's a brother. He's a Christian man. Lives in Idlib, you know, where these a lot of people who are less than kind to Christians live now. And he lost his family, his wife and his kids. And I feel a bond to him because of the turmoil I saw in his face. Well, when that video was recorded. Then there's this man here, Ethan McCourt. And I look at him and I see someone who's had a rather radically different lifestyle. my understanding, multiple wives, various drug issues and things of that nature. But... I have seen him show some care with his kid, at least one kid. I don't know how many kids he has. But I've also seen him. Well, it's not, you know, it's on that wall. Carrying these two kids, this guy and this girl, the Tamal kids, to safety out of that van after their dad, the Good Samaritan, Mr. Tamal, was killed. So he's the one American who showed love in the collateral murder video. And I think about him, you know, I saw an interview with him only a couple years ago or whatnot, in his home, somewhere in the central part of the U.S., I think Oklahoma or something of that nature, maybe Missouri or something of that nature. And, behind him was an artistic cross and whatnot. So it gives you an implication, just an implication. Because a man who's been ripped apart through inappropriate lifestyles and various issues, the Lord can say, "You're mine." Doesn't matter. You're mine. So I don't know. I really hope, Shadi Shada shows a lot of, from the dialogue I've seen, as a man whose trust is in Christ, because of the way I saw the interview with him. Ethan McCord, maybe, so forth. When I look at Daniel Hale, one of the things he really, in watching him, listening to him, and so forth, and reading, because, again, this is me reading his letter to the judge. That letter, I think, was so insightful in showing the character of people and how it rips you apart in being part of, collectives. He's the one that introduced me to the idea of war porn. And I can see the addictive nature because I've been around people who were involved. And I can see the addictive nature of it. And I can see how these things tear a person apart. And I am concerned, it happens in different ways. The circumstances between, Shadi Shada, Ethan McCord, and Daniel Hale are very different. But their life was ripped apart. And so is mine. One of the things that I have, I am so grateful that my friend Corey is coming. Well, okay, this photo here, my friend Chris and I are standing next to this sign. The issue is, I took the picture of Chris. Chris took the picture of me, and I photographed, in GIMP. I don't have Photoshop. I have GIMP. Put it together to make it look like it was a single photo, and it came across pretty well. I did the same thing with Luke, the other gentleman that we went up there. I think I have. I think we did this both. I think we have at least two of these, but and my intent is to do the same thing with Corey because it's, kind of a tradition. But I am delighted the love I see from Corey, that he's driving virtually across country to see me, is a big deal. But the relationship I have with Chris, 11 years now, is the, is something I think the Lord grants some men, the relationship with another man that you can truly call a brother. Chris and I are radically different, but our relationship is extremely strong. My guess is Corey and I are even more different. I don't think we'll have that same relationship because, he's LDS and I'm not. Whereas Chris and I, we're constantly looking at the scripture, looking at the same Lord, looking, virtually through the same eyes to try to see our Creator. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift the Lord has given me. And of course, there's the lady here that I'd want even more. But it's the emotions that all these various life circumstances bring you through. Sometimes there's that intense joy, the intense joy man is coming cross country to see me. The intense joy that I've been, you know, at the top of Big Frog with Chris, or at Buzzard Point with Chris. You know, Buzzard Point, you know, we were, you know, there's the arrow pointing to where we're kind of like, whoa. Those are wonderful things to say I have in my life and so forth. But there's the emotion right now of one last thing. I'm vaguely familiar with this gentleman. Do I even have it up here? But anyway, he's an author. He works with, well, various groups, including WikiLeaks. So, you know, in a sense, there's that bond, because, you know, WikiLeaks, Shofar Leaks, there's a bond here and so forth. And he was making a trip to Scotland and was detained. And he specifically says there he was detained, not arrested. And what was fascinating is what he did is he documented everything that occurred. He said these are all the things they did to me, and they asked me about the purpose of my visit to Iceland. I told them that I was attending a coordinated meeting for the campaign to free Julian Assange. I said I also had attended a pro-Palestinian rally outside of Icelandic Parliament, but I had not been any prior intention. This was in reference to, you know, his other travels, because, you know, his arrest was in Scotland, or his being detained. But he was told he was detained, meaning he had no right to say, you know, he had no right not to respond to questions. He had to respond, and, you know, he had to turn over his cell phone, laptop, and things of that nature for them to examine and, of course, take the data. So, you know, I did that oddity again. You know, it's kind of... he already has 266 comments on here, so it's kind of like, well, I'm way buried, but I did put a comment on there. I've been working on the Shofar Leaks project. For some reason, people seem to run. However, I'm a technology guy. With one of the things proposed years ago was the idea of at least three passwords. One for normal full access. One is distress that gives only limited access even when forensic tools are used. One is self-destruct. The password is entered a few milliseconds after all data is gone. This might be helpful for you or others. However, it's been hard to find interest. You know, because I've read about this many, many times. And of course, you know, I proposed this solution literally years ago. You are somebody... Like this gentleman, you're actively involved in something assertive, shall we say, politically tense. You know, the Julian Assange and, of course, the Palestinian issue, which is, you know, obviously a big deal right now. So you're involved in one of those things. You're traveling. You get to a particular point and they say, you there. You have a cell phone. You have a notebook. Especially cell phone, because people, you know, can't relate, but you know that's a common thing. So you get to some place and say, all right, you have a cell phone. We want you to take your cell phone. And what is done is they basically will take and make a copy of all the data. So they can give you the phone back sometimes. Sometimes they don't. I think it's depending upon the technical prowess of the great people you're dealing with. But, you know, you can easily copy, you know, bit for bit. Everything's on this for examination. And to accuse you of vile things later. And the normal thing is, what is the password? You have to give us the password, as he described. And, you know, what I described before, especially because developed this idea, your data storage is in 1 gigabyte chunks. Each is separately encrypted. And there are techniques that I describe where the fact that the others exist is not known unless you have a certain set of characteristics, because the passwords don't give you access to the keys for this, but the passwords effectively are the keys. So, but anyway, the issue there is, so you have that ability, and if you use your normal password, and let's say you have just, you know, 10 of these gigabyte chunks of data, and you normally you have all access to all 10. You're in a distress situation. You know, so you know, I have password 123, I get full access. You say, okay, I'm in distress, password 456. You give it to, and you simply say, you know, it's 456. They look at it and you can see, oh yeah, you can see all your phone messages and whatnot, but that you just did and whatnot. And they can even take a copy of the data. But the let's say five of the of those gigabyte data, you know, they'll see it in raw form. The other five, they'll look like effectively they have not been used yet. They're just full of random data, just garbage. And so there is nothing that it's basically nothing there, because the one has been, you know, you can see the others, you can't. So even if you copy it, you know, the password didn't get you to it. And then, of course, the third thing is the self-destruct, because you could be in a situation and they want this data. And the issue is what I have on my cell phone. If they get this data, it could bring perhaps harm to somebody or something of that nature, including yourself. So you say, instead of 123, instead of 456, it's 789. Okay, we're going to put in 789. And then suddenly the phone says, welcome, you have a brand new phone. Let's set up your account, because it's gone. And because of the techniques used, you know, I describe it as milliseconds. You know, and because the technique is you lose it because of you've lost the keys. And then at that point, kind of, You're back to the high there. You have a brand new phone. In the meantime, while it's doing that, it'll go and just put random data over what effectively is random data, just to, you know, doubly clean things. And the way that would be done too is, I'm not doing it in sequence so you can get it, you know, halfway through and turn it off to try to capture it and whatnot. No, but you do it random places all over the place. So you do it in such a way that if it gets stopped halfway through, it's not that you have some intact parts, but everything is partial. You know, it's a mess. And that's the whole point. Because when you have a life at stake, you want to do things to protect that life. But, you know, it's simple. It's straightforward. But when you play at that level, when lives are at stake, people say, let's not talk about that. And so I'm being very open about it, hoping to find somebody of interest. And, you know, especially commenting to somebody who is directly active with with WikiLeaks, you know, maybe that opens the door. I'm not optimistic because I'm falling apart. One of the things I discussed with two people, Chris and the one gentleman who responded to me, is there's a tension in my mind. I wrote to the one gentleman who responded to me and said, one of the things I'm struggling with, big time struggling with, I have a friend, an LDS friend. We mutually acknowledge the other person's wrong. And we have a friendship. We'll talk to each other. And we don't run from each other. You know, and I thought about it. He's going from Utah to East Tennessee, you know, the far side. North Carolina is a whole lot closer. and I haven't seen my family in 11 years. But I've reached out to the Christian community, the local. You know, I physically went to the Roman Catholic place, to several others. I've reached out to the Orthodox Church. I reached out to a lot of people, you know, and obviously the Baptist Church that I mentioned. Granted, those things are only, you know, a day or two. But some of the other things I've done, I've reached out to, you know, MetaView, Covenant, and so forth, for 11 years, and they don't reach back. Again, the one time MetaView reached back, they reached back with the armor of the law. You know, they sent the police to me to shut me up. And the thought, I mean, it's abundantly clear. It's been clear for years. If the only focus in life is that warm relationship, I'd be joining the LDS Church because I'm finding that warm relationship. And again, the guy I buy a lot of food from appears to be very affiliated. But the issue is, Joseph Smith is a fraud. The LDS Church are polytheists. And I cannot, in order to have relationship with people, follow something that is completely untrue. I must follow in obedience to the truth, the one that is not hidden, my Creator, who made himself not hidden, very clear, right in front of you. Look, this is me. And I'm going to tell you about me in depth. You know, the one of the things that has, because one of the things that has become a focus in the effort in the last few days, Matthew 5:9, very different reading. Blessed the peacemakers, because they will be called sons of God. You know, you read that and you say, oh, well, that sounds positive. There's no indication in there that, you know, life will go well for you or anything of that nature. Nothing. It's not there. They'll be called sons of God. But that, you know, and who do you want to be called sons of God by? Well, God. But that does not mean health and wealth. It does not mean that you'll see peace. It does mean this is what you should do in obedience to Christ, out of love for him, and then, of course, love for others. You should be a peacemaker. That's why I've been striving, was attempting to strive to reconcile relationships between people in Donbass and Ukraine. To reconcile relationships right now are, I haven't done anything direct, but to point to people, don't hate the people of Gaza, because the Christian Zionists sure seem to be. And that I ache for that, because that's not following Christ. Simply not following Christ. So I'm sorry, but I'm really concerned. I'm concerned about my attitude. The feeling of being alone. I have a man coming cross country to see me. I feel alone. I have a brother, Chris. We talk most every day. I feel alone. I feel so alone. It's ridiculous. And it hurts. You know, and well, let's close with this. One of my favorite verses. I'll read the LSV, since that's what I have up. I don't think I read it this way before. Okay. Ecclesiastes 9:9. See life with the wife whom you have loved all the days of the life of your vanity that he is giving you under the sun, all the days of your vanity, for it is your portion in life, even of your labor that you are laboring at under the sun. See life with the wife whom you have loved. Her, this lady right here, Dorothy Jane. I'm having trouble in my mind picturing her face. I look at the photos and I say, yeah, I recognize her, kind of. You know, I'm not about the little things in our, you know, on her face, little, I'm, you know, they're still in my mind. you know, little things that kind of define her. And that voice, you know, I'd love to hear, you know, I'd love to call you back, whatever she says. To hear that voice next to me is just amazing. To have her hand in mind, you know, kind of like that. Ripped apart. My lady, my wife. I love you and I want you back.